sure you've heard. It's been a difficult day. It's been a difficult day for Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael today. Four people were killed, seven people were wounded in two different piguim. And we felt it was appropriate that we begin the evening with a Perek of Tehillim. I'm going to ask Rabbi Riskin to please lead us in a Perek of Tehillim.
Shir lamalo te sainai el arim me ayin yavo ezri.
Shir lamalo sainai el arim me ayin yavo ezri.
Ezri meim Adonai osei shamayim vaaretz. Al yitein lamot raglecha. Al yanum shomrecha. Hinei lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomrecha, Adonai tzilcha al yad yiminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka ve'oreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitcha uvoecha. Me'atavi adolam.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you first to tonight's very important discussion. The question of the centrality of Zionism to the Jewish religion is something that has been debated for centuries. However, there is no more relevant time than today to focus our attention on that unity between our expression of Judaism in our time and our love for Zion and the connection between the two. Even more relevant it becomes, of course, today, in light of the difficulty that we've gone through this last summer, where our community itself, the community of religious Zionists, has become so divided over some of the central issues to our philosophy. We have gathered here tonight three of the leading rabbis in the world representing our unique philosophy and approach to the expression of Judaism in our time. I'd like to ask first to address us tonight. Each one of the speakers will speak for approximately 15, 20 minutes. Then there'll be questions from the audience. There's a microphone in the middle. And there'll be a quick summation by each of the rabbis of their position. I'd like to ask first Rabbi Riskin, who we all know, who began his career in New York, and I'm sure all of us in the room here know him from there, who was a star from a very, very, very young age, and who has a major, major enterprise and a major contribution to the future of Judaism in this country, all over the country today, and who represents all of us in a way that makes us all very, very, very proud. Rabbi Riskin.
Erev Tov. This has been not a very easy day because of the pigua which took place just literally a few meters from where I live, Tzomet Gush Etzion. I would like, nevertheless, to attempt as strongly as I can to share with you what I think is the problematica within religious Zionism today, where I think we went wrong, where I think we have to go, and perhaps even to share with you my deepest existential fear at this point. Like every good Yiddish speaker, before I say something, I would like to say something. We've just finished a period of tshuva, defined by the Rambam as vidui. It's fascinating. Let me start with a not so pleasant joke that I can only tell because I'm an Israeli. And I'm an Israeli because Baruch Hashem, although I was a rabbi in a synagogue in New York for 19 years, I've been the Rav in Efrat for 22 years. So I feel that I'm here. A Jew becomes a Baal Tshuva. And he goes to an Orthodox rabbi. Excuse me, he says, do you say Yalev Yavo on Thanksgiving? The Orthodox rabbi looks at him and says, what is Thanksgiving? Goes to a Reform rabbi, excuse me, do you say Yalev Yavo on Thanksgiving? What's Yalev Yavo? He's not quite sure what to do, but there's an Israeli on his block. So he figures maybe the Israeli knows. Excuse me, he says, but do you say Yalev Yavo on Thanksgiving? And the Israeli says, what's excuse me? Now, we went through a very, very difficult stage. Nobody knows how to say I'm sorry in this country. We went through an Oslo peace process. I was originally very much in favor of it, just so you know where I stand on the spectrum of things. For good or for ill, I've always felt that there ought to be a Palestinian state. The demographic problem did not arise just now. And many years ago, in 1976, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, asked to see me. I was in Ein Surim for the summer. And the Efrat plan, at that time it was just a dream, was not part of Gush Emunim, which was in favor of settlements throughout Israel. We met for about 2 hours, a very, very inspiring individual, Lashon Hamata. And at the end he asked that I make Efrat part of Gush Emunim. And I asked him then as well, what do you do with the 2.5 million Arabs? Because Gush Emunim believed in Greater Israel. We have to give the Arabs the vote if we become one country, one nation. And they will soon outnumber us. And he took my hand in his and he looked at me very deeply and he said to me, Harav Riskin, Heim Yit Yahadu. They will become Jewish. Using the same expression of Megillat Esther, because of fear of the Jews. And I said then, and I felt very deeply, if indeed they were to become Jewish, then I would make Efrat part of Gush Emunim. Until that time, it would remain an independent project. I say this because I was never a devotee of Greater Israel. Ultimately, Bezrat Hashem, but not under the present conditions. And I believe in normative messianism as defined by the Rambam. We went into Oslo, I think with very good intentions. We even gave Kalashnikovs to the enemy with very good intentions. As former Prime Minister Rabin HaManoach explained, they can do what we cannot do. It turned out to be a Trojan horse. No one said, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. An honest mistake, but I'm sorry. There were Rabbanim who said, Hayo lo tihyeh, and urged the people of Gush Katif not to prepare for the inevitable. No one said, I'm sorry. And apparently the Rambam is absolutely correct. It's very difficult to say, I'm sorry. Chazal understood how important it was. We say it every Yom Tov, Mipnei Chatoenu Golinu Me'atzeinu. And I want to try to explain as briefly as I can where I think that our camp, the religious Zionist camp, made a mistake. And therefore, to a certain extent, I'm saying I'm sorry. Religious Zionism was always a critical bridge between the secular Zionists who understood very well, you see it in Herzl's Judenstadt, that given the rise of nationalism on the one hand, because until the middle of the 18th century, the world was divided into religions. And with all the difficulty of pogroms and anti-Semitism, we were a religion like other religions. And we had a place in the sun, even a respected place in the sun, despite the pogroms, because it was understood that we were the mother religion of Islam and Christianity. With the rise of nationalism, when we became left man out, we were the people without a nation, without a homeland. And with the rise of secularism that didn't exist, certainly from the Mishnaic period until the middle of the 19th century, with the rise of secularism, anti-Semitism stemming from nationalism from without and secularism from within made it well nigh impossible for the Jewish people to exist without their own state. That was the position of the secular Zionists. And secular Zionism became a very strong force. The religious world, the Haredi religious world at that time, took very seriously the three oaths at the end of Masechet Ketubot, that we had to wait for God to bring the Messiah, to bring us to Israel. Shelo ya'alu b'chuma, shelo yimridu neged umot ha'olam. And they were against doing anything in terms of Eretz Yisrael without the Messiah taking us there. We shared the love of Torah of the Haredi world, and we shared the commitment of the necessary return to the land, to a police force, to a defense force, with the secular Zionists. And therefore we became a bridge between both groups. Initially, through the various governments of Israel. The fact that we were this bridge was exceedingly significant. We understood it, and we realized that we have to remain within the government. We were fundamentally normative messianists. By normative messianists, I mean not Shalom Achshav and not Mashiach Achshav, but HaMashiach Rochev Al Chamor. Why on a donkey and not in a Volvo or a helicopter, Nachbesa? Because as Rav Herzog explained, a donkey sets out, sometimes even inexplicably stops, continues, sometimes even goes backwards, but ultimately reaches his destination. It is a process that must take into account all of the forces of realpolitik. And that was religious Zionism. A great deal changed, first after the Six-Day War, but especially after the Mohammed Yom HaKippurim. First of all, the Six-Day War seemed to be the kind of open miracle that Jews hadn't experienced since biblical times. And if at the end of the Six-Day War all the car stickers were saying Kol HaKavod L'Tzahal, with the Yom Kippur War, when Tzahal was caught with his pants down, and nevertheless we still won, the stickers started to say, Yisrael batach b'Hashem. And religious Zionism became not a junior partner in the Zionistic enterprise, but to a very great extent a senior partner. To such an extent that religious Zionism won many, many mandates in the Knesset. Religious Zionists gained many of the top portfolios in the cabinet. And religious Zionism created magnificent hitnachluyot, settlements, and marvelous school systems. I believe when the history of this period is written, one of the glories will be the settlement movement, very idealistic settlements, very Torah-oriented settlements. And the educational system, which has yeshiva high schools for every interest, from Gemara to Tanakh to the geographic area around the yeshiva, to sports, to music, to art. Yeshivot Hezder and Yeshivot Kdam Tzvayot for just about every interest. And this is marvelous, except that the Hitnachluyot had Vadot Kabbalah. If you were religious, in most cases, you were accepted. If not, not. And the school system was basically for the religious. At the same time, secular Zionism was going to the opposite extreme. Whereas someone like David Ben-Gurion enjoyed bacon and eggs for breakfast, he learned Tanakh every day. The secular Zionists had the kind of love for Israel. They sang songs about Livnot Ulihibanot Ba, building up and being in turn built up by working the land. Secular Zionists moved further and further away from Tanakh, from Jewish history, to a certain extent not even demanding that these be necessary subjects for matriculation exams for their high school students. Former Prime Minister Rabin Hamanoach could talk about grave sites and certain settlements as being simply real estate that certainly can be exchanged very simply. We care desperately about our own communities. We didn't reach out to secular Israel. And two different communities were formed. I think we all have got to understand the Gemara in Brachot Lamed Bet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech Reid Kishichei Damcha, go down because your nation has acted perversely. Omer Rebbe Eliezer, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu le Moshe Rabbeinu, Reid Migdulatcha, leave your high station, your great kolel with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Rosh Yeshiva, and you, Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Avrech. Klum natati lecha gedula ela b'shvil Yisrael. I gave you greatness only because of the Jewish people. Im amcha chotei atalamali. If you are sinning, what do I need you for? We didn't go to the people. We became more and more insular, and we began to espouse Mashiach now, and we thought that nothing could stop the messianic course. We forgot that we were in a process on a donkey. And we became two nations that stopped talking to each other. My existential fear. Two sentences. I feel within Israel the sense that anyone who is over the green line has committed the sin of stealing someone else's land. That was what was clearly stated by the High Court in Geneva, and that's what's been accepted by our court, and that's even what's been accepted by our government. And I believe in my heart of hearts that if those of us who are beyond the green line are sinners and thieves, those who are within the green line are not much better. Because if you truly read the Arab press, you see that for the Arab press, settlements are beyond the green line. Illegal settlements are within the green line. Only Muslims have the right to live in this part of the world from their perspective. Therefore, I think that religious Zionism has a tremendously important job to do, to once again reestablish the right of Israel to a homeland in the Middle East, with compromise, with understanding, but that we have a right to be. Similarly, I think it's critically important that we reach out to the non-religious world and do whatever we can to bring them closer to the kind of values which all of us need: a Jewish culture, a common language, a common culture based upon our sacred literature, which will enable us to be the unique people we're supposed to be. If we do that, and if we're able to overcome the terrorism that threatens not only us, but the entire free world, not only will we survive, but with God's help, we will prevail. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Riskin. Thank you very much for those words of wisdom. We have the great pleasure of having with us tonight Rabbi Brander, who many of us will know as being the man who went to Boca Raton when there was no Yiddishkeit there and founded a shul and a school and a kollel and an outreach center and really filled the community with a new sense of Torah vibrance. So much so, so noticed and so admired was he, that Rabbi Lam in a lunch with myself maybe a year and a half ago said, there's one young rabbi out there who I could see many years from now becoming the president of Yeshiva University. And that was him. And I guess towards that end, he decided to pluck him early, together with Richard Joel, and make him the dean of the Center for the Jewish Future of Yeshiva University. A major new initiative, a very admirable and major new initiative of Yeshiva University, to reach out and extend its presence throughout its schools and throughout the Jewish community, not just of New York, but of all of the United States. We thought it would be appropriate tonight to hear an American perspective on the future of religious Zionism, both in Israel and in America, from Rabbi Brander. Please.
Shoot, Rev Riskin, Rev Lau, I'm going to begin with one statement. I've had the opportunity in the past 30-some-odd days to be in my new position at Yeshiva University, spend a few hours almost each day with the president of Yeshiva University, and the last job that I would ever want is his. I'm very happy with the responsibilities that I have. I want to begin by just mentioning that there are four different ideas that I want to communicate regarding the ideals of religious Zionism outside of Eretz Yisrael, outside of Medina Yisrael. The first is how one should view religious Zionism from Chutz Laretz, the challenges of religious Zionism in Chutz Laretz, and to develop that point into two points. And then the challenges that have even happened most recently after the disengagement. The idea of viewing religious Zionism. It's important that we have the ability to articulate that Medina Yisrael is the conduit through which the Geula is coming for all of Klal Yisrael. And that there is an idea that is found, as Rabbi Riskin articulated, an idea of natural geula, a geula that is celebrated in the values of a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David, a geula in which the idea of tshuva, of complete tshuva, is not necessarily related with each other, as is articulated by both the Ramban and the Or HaChaim, that the signs that we are witnessing now around us clearly celebrate the idea of Gula, warts and all, Ani Rochev Alechamor. Rav Kook asks the question that Rabbi Riskin asked, and that is, why a chamor? And Rav Kook gives a slightly different answer. Rav Kook explains that a chamor is the only animal which has Kedushah, even though it is not kosher. Even though it does not have the external manifestations of Kashrut, even though it does not split its hooves and chew its cud, nevertheless, the chamor is considered a holy animal. There is a requirement of pidyon peter rechem, of the redeeming the chamor. Rav Kook's idea was that it doesn't matter who is involved in the redemption process, whether they have the external look of a religious Jew or not. If they're interested in the redemption of the Jewish people, then they are part of the solution. They guarantee the immortality and the eternality of the Jewish people. This message of communicating that Medina Yisrael is the conduit through which Geula is achieved is not an easy message to communicate. Perhaps it is easier when you have the opportunity to live in the land, and as you walk the streets, it becomes almost obvious. When you have the opportunity to see for the first time in thousands of years that the Jewish people have their own army, to see that there are more people involved in Torah study since the time of the Second Temple. But when you're walking the streets of Galut, it's much harder to communicate a message that's not black and white. There's a whole Baal Tshuva movement out there that's committed to Judaism in its fullest. But in their Weltanschauung of Judaism, the role of Medinat Yisrael has not been communicated. There is a commitment to Torah and Mitzvot, but the idea of Medinat Yisrael does not play a role in their gestalt. And while Eretz Yisrael is important and becomes a theoretical idea, Yerushalayim Ircha V'Rachamim Tashuv is a theoretical concept and is not a manifestation of the contemporary reality. And so we have a responsibility to communicate a message of the modern state of Israel, and with all of its challenges, it represents the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu guaranteeing and helping us guarantee the coming of Mashiach through our endeavors and through our efforts. There is a certain loneliness that one feels in the diaspora, especially outside the tri-state area, regarding the issue of religious Zionism. There is a loneliness when you find, I remember when I came to Boca Raton 14 years ago, there was a small synagogue, and we were the only synagogue in Boca Raton, and there were other Orthodox synagogues in Boca Raton, that said Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut. In all of South Florida, at the present time, which is the second largest Jewish population in the United States, there are maybe four synagogues that say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut. And it's not about the challah with a bracha, without a bracha, before, after Shemoneh Esrei, after davening. It's not about that. It's a mindset. It's a whole mindset out there. It's very lonely when you live in a place in which you feel that you have no colleagues to celebrate the idea of religious Zionism with. It's very, very lonely when you try to create schools that celebrate a certain ideal in which you recognize, while HaTikvah is not part of Tefillah, and it shouldn't be viewed as part of Tefillah, but to be mevatel it and not recognize what it represents is also inappropriate. It's very disconcerting when you feel very alone, when most of the schools that have a rigorous Talmudic and Tanakh schedule within their curriculum don't celebrate the idea of religious Zionism. And the few schools that do feel very disconnected from each other and feel very disconnected from the fact that they don't feel that there is a flagship for them to be able to connect to. There isn't a sense of camaraderie, of connection. It's not about just talking to somebody else what you're going to do on Yom HaTzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim. It's about talking about what is the environment within the classroom. How do you communicate the contemporary issues that are happening within the state of Israel so that when a, God forbid, when a challenge happens in Gush Etzion, that your students in Boca Raton or California or somewhere else feel that pain and don't treat the day as a business as usual. It's a very difficult challenge when you really feel that there are points of light, but there's no sense of connection. And that challenge is even increased when you're not convinced that you can staff all the schools that say they celebrate the idea of religious Zionism with rabbeim and Judaic teachers that celebrate the idea of religious Zionism, where the dean or the Rosh Yeshiva may say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut, but the teacher hides in the back and says Tachnun. It's a challenge. And the student sees this bifurcation within the staff. And so these are the challenges, I think, of religious Zionism, perhaps in a much more simplistic way than the ones that Rabbi Riskin articulated, but equally as important, a certain sense of loneliness, a lack of a flagship, the need for staffing. And another concern is the concern also of what happens to the student when they go to Israel for a year. The Israel experience that my students have is not the same Israel experience that I had 20 plus years ago. They may come. They do come back with a commitment to Torah Yisrael and Am Yisrael, but I'm not convinced that all of them come back with a commitment to Medinat Yisrael. And what happens in this year? What is the passion and the energy that drives the curriculums of the various schools? The intellectual infrastructures, more and more of communities around the country, both in the tri-state area, throughout North America, is not just the rabbi. The intellectual infrastructure is also the kollel. At best, the religious Zionist movement, at best, including anything that you want to call a kollel, maybe has 10. And that's a slight exaggeration. How many kollelim do our friends who share all of the halachot and all of the commitment to Torah and mitzvot that we have, how many hundreds of kollelim do they have? The intellectual infrastructure of community is defined by the people who learn. And most of our communities, that intellectual infrastructure has nothing to do with the religious Zionist gestalt. And so, one of the major agendas, I believe, of the religious Zionist movement outside of Eretz Israel has to be to bone up on the issues, to create a camaraderie between the schools, to create relationships between the rabbanim, to make sure that millions are invested in the establishment of religious Zionist kollelim, where learning is at the highest level and the philosophy is consistent with the ideas that the kehillah represents and that our community represents, and that we're not taken hostage by other ideas and other value systems. And in many ways, that's the thing that moved me to connect to Yeshiva University and to leave a home that I love so much. Because I believe for the first time there is that understanding at YU that it's time for them to become a movement, not just a university, and to celebrate these ideas. At the same time, I believe that the religious Zionist movement in America has something to offer the religious Zionist movement in Israel. And it's the idea that Rabbi Riskin spoke about, the notion of kihilot. Baruch Hashem, we have been able, in many ways, because we don't have the luxuries that one has in Medina Israel, we have been able to create kihilot, strong kihilot, a place not just where people go to daven, a place that people associate with, a place in which there is a phone number to call the shul even after hours, where there is a youth director who is concerned about the kids, where there is a chevra kadisha that's not just city-based, but community-based, where there is a chesed infrastructure. The building of kihilot is something that we've been very successful with. And it's time for us to learn from our rabbinic colleagues in Eretz Israel, our religious nationalist colleagues in Eretz Israel, about the responsibilities to Am Yisrael and Klal Yisrael, and for us to share a little bit about the notion of Kihilat Yisrael. The capacity to be connected to the Federation and the extended Jewish community without compromising the responsibilities to the religious community. The ability to capture both the hills of Tel Aviv as well as those of Gush Etzion. The disengagement. One of the biggest challenges that I have found regarding this disengagement is the fact that the religious Zionist community in Israel, although I just hear that secondhand, but in America for sure, it created such a unrest, such a chasm within that community. Rabbanim, who were close to each other, simply were so vociferously against each other on these issues that it harmed relationships. For me personally, I took the position that a Rav in Chutz La'aretz has no right to speak out against the state of Israel, no matter what his personal feelings are. He doesn't have enough skin in the game, so to say. And my colleagues, many of them, I would even suggest most of them, disagreed. Some of them understood that this was a machloket l'shem shamayim. Some of them did not. Members in my community that I consider dear friends understood that we may disagree, and while they went to rallies in front of the Israeli consulate in Miami, I would not attend those rallies, and many of them took this as a betrayal of my ideals of being a religious Zionist. It's a rift that has not yet healed. Obviously, time will help. But there's a definite need for there to be a coming together, a dialogue, under some umbrella in which we can talk about these issues and get past them. And finally, it's very, very hard to be able to communicate a message about these issues when you don't get a clear message in any way, shape, or form from the religious Zionist community in Israel. I mentioned to the distinguished Rabbanim here tonight, earlier privately, that so many of us wanted to do and help members of the Gush Katif community, of the Gaza community, because they did not go to that area as thieves in the night. I remember sitting in the auditorium of Lamport at Yeshiva University, where prime ministers, both of the Labor and Likud, got up and said, if you, the religious Zionist Jews in America, from Yeshiva University, are not going to settle in Yehuda, Shomron, and Gaza, then who will? Come and settle there. I remember those remarks from all ministers, all prime ministers. They didn't come there as thieves in the night. But the minute this challenge happened, you had these boutique charities coming at you. Everybody saying that they were the true charity to help, to the point in which you simply had so many different people that wanted a piece of you, you questioned who was authentic and who was not. There needs to be a stronger relationship between the Rabbanim of the religious Zionist community in Israel and the religious Zionist community in the diaspora, so that when challenges like this happened, like I remember a few years ago when Rabbi Riskin needed to collect money for bulletproof buses, it was one phone call. I trust Rabbi Riskin with my life. Tells me he needs bulletproof buses. That's the end of the story. Whatever we can do to help will help. Nothing more to discuss. But there needs to be a wherewithal to have a discussion both in the tragic times and in the good times so that we can work together. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to make two comments about Eicha. The first was that the third parak of Eicha is the one that focuses on the individual challenges, and it's the longest parak, because we cannot forget about the individual challenges during a time of crisis, even though the crisis looks so large. And that the fifth parak, which speaks about the individual who's gone through the challenge, is the only parak that's not in alphabetical order, because often immediately after the crisis, it's very hard to organize things. And that we should be reminded of that fact when we deal with national crisis, not to forget about the individual and to understand that sometimes there's a need for reflection and introspection. But he also shared with us one other idea. He also shared with us that when the Kohanim, when the Beit HaMikdash was burning, when they threw the keys up to Shemayim, and they gave the keys back to God, that was the quintessential act of destruction, when one was willing to give up. That is the ultimate act of Korban. And obviously, we are not here to give up. We are not here to say that there are no problems, but we are here to clearly say that we have a mission, and that we're committed to that mission. We're committed to making sure that our schools are strong, that our schools and our Rabbanim and our community celebrate the ideas of religious Zionism. And we're here to make sure that the relationships between the Rabbanim in Eretz Israel and the Rabbanim in America are established with extra strength, so the cross-pollination as well as the synergy and the communication can be strong in a fashion that allows us to bring religious Zionism to its complete glory, which will allow us to be able to celebrate ultimately the full ideal of the redemption when all the Jews of Chutz La'aretz will be living in Eretz Israel. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Rabbi Brander for that American perspective. I'm sure there'll be some comments from the audience when they have an opportunity. The future of religious Zionism in this country is dependent upon God's blessing us with young, dynamic, charismatic leaders for our community. We are lucky tonight to have with us one such person, Rabbi Lau, who in addition to being a great scholar, has recently published his work on Rav Avadia Yosef's Tshuvas, is also one of the few rabbis in this country who understands the notion of being a rabbi of a kihila, of establishing kihilot. And I think all of us recognize the unique talent that Rabbi Lau has, and we see a very bright future for him in the future of our movement here in Israel. That I'd like to ask Rabbi Lau to come address us.
I will start with Rav Riskin's joke with a word of excuse. Excuse me that I will speak Hebrew. זה ערב שבאמת יש בו כאב, כי הרבה מאוד זמן לא היה פיגוע, וכשעובר שבוע, שבועיים, חודש, אנחנו שוכחים. למדנו בדף יומי מסכת עירובין, שכשקבוצה של אנשים, שיירה, הולכת בדרך ויוצרת לחנות, ויסעו ויחנו, מגיעה שבת, הם צריכים לעשות ביניהם עירוב. דף ח' מסכת עירובין. בהלכה יש הבדל בין שיירה שיוצאת למלחמה לבין שיירה שיוצאת לדרך רגילה. לפי ההלכה, שיירה שיוצאת למלחמה לא צריכה לעשות עירוב. פטורה מעירוב. שיירה שהולכת בדרך רגילה ועוצרת חייבת לעשות עירוב. חפץ חיים בהלכות עירובין בביאור הלכה מסביר באופן פשוט מאוד. כששיירה יוצאת למלחמה, כל הכוחות נמצאים ביחד. עירוב למחנה שיוצא למלחמה זה שטות גמורה. כל הקבוצה זה אישיות אחת. הקולקטיב נמצא כבר במטרה שלשם כך הולכים בדרך. אין עירוב בשיירה שיוצאת למלחמה. אבל כששיירה הולכת סתם בדרך ועוצרת, צריך לבדוק מה הקשר ביניהם. צריך לעשות עירוב, צריך לחבר אותם. היום בערב אני מבטיח לכם שעם ישראל בארץ ישראל, במדינת ישראל לפחות, הוא קולקטיב. יש סולידריות, יש כאב, יש קצת יותר שקט, יש קצת יותר נימוס, יש קצת יותר רחמים, כי הערב אנחנו מחנה שיוצא למלחמה. אתמול אנחנו היינו במחנה שנמצא סתם, שכחנו כבר, וצריך לשאול מה מחבר אותנו, מה מדביק אותנו. אני רוצה לספר לכם על שבת אתמול שהייתי בה יחד עם 30 משפחות של רבנים ציונות דתית. רבנים של ציונות דתית נסעו לשבת עם המשפחות 30 כדי לעשות שבת שלמה שיחות של שלום בינינו בתוך הציונות הדתית. זה נשמע נורא. מישהו שבא מארצות הברית או ממקום רחוק יותר לא מבין בכלל מה קורה פה. מסתכלים עלינו, 30 משפחות זה 60 מבוגרים וזה עוד כמה עשרות רבות של ילדים, קבוצה, שיירה שיוצאת מחנה. וכשמסתכלים עלינו מרחוק אנחנו נראים ממש כמו משפחה, one family. אנחנו נמצאים ממש אותו דבר, אבל כשנכנסים פנימה פתאום מתברר שיושבים בתוך הקבוצה של ה-30 רבנים האלה רב אחד שגר באחד ההרים בשומרון ורב אחד שגר בגוש עציון ורב אחד שבכלל גר בפתח תקווה, ו10 שנים מאז רצח רבין, 10 שנים הם לא דיברו בגלל שיש מחלוקת השקופה. וכשמסתכלים מבחוץ חושבים שהשתגענו. מאיפה יש לכם young Israeli's rabbi החוצפה להיות במחלוקת? מאיפה יש את הפריבילג' הזה להיות במחלוקת? אז למה עשו את השבת צריך לקרוא לזה הפיס, איזה שיחות שלום? למה עשו את זה? בגלל שאחרי ההתנתקות, אחרי הקיץ הקשה הזה, אחרי השבר של הקיץ הזה, כולנו מבינים שאנחנו חייבים לעבוד ביחד. השבר הוא נורא. ההרגשה שאנחנו מתפרקים, שהקולקטיב כבר לא נמצא, הביא את כולנו, כל מי שהזמינו אותו לבוא, 30 רבנים, כולם הגיעו. ישבו שם רבנים בחדר שדיברו אחד עם השני ואומרים, אתה הוצאת את הספרים שלי מהישיבה שלך. והיו צריכים לדבר. זה כמעט משיח נאו. אבל היה שם דבר אחד שאני אומר לציבור הזה, ישיבה אוניברסיטי, היה שם דבר אחד שאנחנו צריכים ללמוד קשה מאוד. כמעט כולם, 26 רבנים מתוך 30, 26 מתוך 30 היו תלמידים של הרב צבי יהודה קוק. 4 אחרים
באו ממקום אחר, מישיבת גוש עציון, שקשורים קצת להשקפה של הרב סולובייצ'יק. ציונות דתית של ישראל באופן מובהק, באופן חד משמעי, נמצאים בעומק של ההשקפה של הרב צבי יהודה קוק, לא רק של הרב אברהם יצחק הכהן קוק, זה כולם, של הרב צבי יהודה קוק, שזה אומר השקפה ביחס, דבר ראשון, ארץ ישראל שלמה, דבר שני, לימוד תורה בלי אקדמיה. אנחנו חייבים להגיד את הדברים האלה. יש בציונות הדתית הישראלית, בהנהגה הרוחנית, בהנהגה הרבנית, יש השקפה מאוד ברורה וחזקה ביחס לערכים, ביחס להשקפה, שהציונות הדתית של ארצות הברית הייתה, לפחות מה שאני לומד מהספרים או מהרב ריסקין או מהרב ליכטנשטיין, הייתה במקום אחר. הקשבתי כמה שיכולתי להבין את האנגלית לשני הרבנים הכל כך גדולים שדיברו לפניי, והם השתמשו כל הזמן במילים religious Zionist, ציונות דתית, in Israel, in America. לא נאמר פה המילה modern orthodox, לא אמרו את זה, ואני מקשיב טוב ושואל למה. האם זה פסה? האם כבר אסור להגיד modern orthodox? מה זה אומר? אני רוצה להגיד לכם, רבותיי, בשאלה, לא בתשובה. כשבישראל מנסים להבין מה ההבדל בין religious Zionist למודרן אורתודוקס, מבינים שכשאתה אומר מודרן אורתודוקס, אתה מתכוון לזה. אתה מתכוון ש- you are part of the society in the world, in the western world. אתה חלק מהעולם. אתה חלק מההשכלה. אתה חלק מהאנשים. אתה חלק מהעולם. אתה רוצה להיות חלק מהתורה של העולם. הרב ליכטנשטיין גאה שהוא מלמד ספרות של העולם. להיות איש מודרני זה אדם שמסתכל על האיש החילוני, ה-secular person, ואומר, יש לו values, הוא מלא, הוא לא דתי, הוא לא שומר מצוות, הוא לא שומר על ארץ ישראל השלמה, אבל הוא פול, מלא בערכים. זה נקרא להיות איש שהוא בתוך העולם. להיות אורתודוקס זה להיות קבוצה דתית מחויבת להלכה. זה הפשט. ולהיות מודרן אורתודוקס זה להיות סכיזופרן. אבל זה החיים. ציונות דתית לא חיה בבלבול הזה. להיות ציוני זה להיות נאמן להשקפה שעם ישראל צריך לחיות בארץ ישראל. זה נקרא להיות ציוני. ולחיות על פי התורה זה נקרא להיות דתי. אבל אתה יכול לגור ביישוב, בבית אל, ביישוב אחר, וללמוד תורה, ולהאמין בארץ ישראל, אבל להיות לגמרי לגמרי אנטי כל העולם המודרני, ואתה ציוני דתי. ואסור לנו, רבותיי, אסור לנו לבלבל ואסור לנו לנסות ולערבב את המושגים. אנחנו צריכים להבין שליהדות של ישיב יוניברסיטי הקלאסית של רב סולובייצ'יק ושאני למדתי מהרב ריסקין, זאת יהדות שצריכה להשפיע על הרוח של היהדות הדתית בישראל. היא צריכה ללמד ערכים שיש בהם אחריות לעולם. הציונות הדתית של ישראל יש בה המון שליחות, המון כוח. החברים שלי מהשבת הזאת, שהרבה זמן לא דיברתי עם חלק מהם, הם אנשים של מסירות נפש 100%. כל החיים שלהם זה מסירות נפש לכלל ישראל, לארץ ישראל. אבל יש מה ללמוד הרבה בהשקפה. ועוד נקודה אחת שהוזכר בדברים שלפניי. רב ברנדר אמר את זה ואני לוקח את זה בצורה מאוד רצינית. שלנו, הרבנים הישראלים, יש מה ללמוד מהרבנים בארצות הברית, בעולם, אבל בוודאי בארצות הברית, מה זאת קהילה. אנחנו חיים באווירה של ראשית צמיחת גאולתנו. וכשאומרים גאולה, אז מדברים במקרו, מדברים על תיקון עולם, ראשית צמיחת גאולתנו. מדברים על שינוי של עם ישראל. כשמדברים על קהילה, מדברים על מקום, מדברים על אזור, מדברים על neighborhood, מדברים על שכנים. זה עולם אחר. ואם יש דבר שאנחנו צריכים לייבא לארץ מארצות הברית, חוץ מסנדי, זה אני מביא, אבל חוץ מזה, אני הייתי מעלה לארץ את העבודה שצריך ללמוד איך בונים קהילה. חושבים שבארץ לא צריך קהילה כי מדברים עברית. זה שטות גמורה. החברה הישראלית חייבת קהילות כדי להציל את הישראלים שמאבדים את היהדות שלהם. זאת הצלת יהדות בישראל. ואני קורא לזה ראשית צמיחת קהילתנו. אנחנו צריכים להביא לארץ את הלימוד הזה של לבנות קהילות. לבנות קהילות, אחריות לקהילה, אחריות לחינוך בקהילה. ואנחנו מסוגלים, בעזרת השם, לקחת את הכוחות שיש לנו, ובעזרת השם באמת להיות שיירה שיוצאת לדרך, שהקדוש ברוך הוא יזכה אותנו שנהיה שיירה שיוצאת לדרך של חיים ולא לצאת למלחמה, ונלמד איך לעשות את העירוב שלנו בצורה פוזיטיבית, בצורה של בנייה, בצורה של אהבה, וזאת תהיה באמת תשובה גדולה של מחזיר שכינתו לציון, בגלל שכשאנחנו נחזור לפה, אנחנו העם היושב בציון, נכין לקדוש ברוך הוא את הבית שהוא יוכל לחיות בתוכנו. תודה.
Okay, thank you very, very much, Rabbi Lau.